KPFTCar or visit kpft.org. Thank you. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Coming up next, Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings. Welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is Technology Bites. My name is Jay Lee.
And I am Peter Hughes.
And I am also Peter Hughes. I mean, and I am Flicted.
I also am. Hold on. I'm not Flicted.
You're not. It's
I'm
not
Barrett.
Your turn. No, it is your turn.
It is my turn.
And I am Lee.
And that man over there.
Rouvels.
Welcome to the show, everyone. We're all here. Yay. I am in a particularly good mood because after discovering that our IRC server was deprecated and ended of lifed.
Ended.
Detonated.
We have risen up our own. We have we have made IRC great again.
There you go.
Make my IRC now. Yes.
We have our own IRC server, although it's unimaginatively named irc.geekradio.com. I thought we should have named
cuckoo.
It cuckoo.geekradio.com.
But spelled funny. Like
ketchup. So everyone... No, but we have our own IRC server now. I don't see a way...
Yeah, I was originally going to register Ketchup Club. Because I thought it'd be funny to have, you know, everybody go with Jay to the Ketchup Club.
It's the night at the Roxbury, but night at the Ketchup Club. Did you just make a mess?
But I decided that...
what they're doing in there.
Stupid cable. But I decided that that weird spelling of ketchup would be too difficult for easel people because they already, you know, didn't know how to spell cuckoo. So ketchup was going to be even worse, so...
So you registered Quetzalcoatl Club there you go. Instead?
Who do I talk to get ops around here?
You have to register your nickname.
Oh, I'm registered, I think.
Let's see.
So it's happening right now, huh?
My name is now Nick Surf.
Watch the channel.
There. We're in Tech Bytes, I believe. Pound Tech Bytes.
Oh, look. Somebody got promoted to operator.
Someone sure did. Well, I thought I was registered.
That was
fine. Oh, no.
I was going to say, last time I checked, I don't know, day before yesterday, nobody had registered except me.
I'm registered. Now do I have to identify? Message, Nick, serve, identify.
Oh,
1, 2, 3, 4.
He's working.
That's supposed to tell us what your ident string is.
Oh, oops. I thought that would change it to stars when I over the radio.
Hunter 2 is your new password.
Yay. IRC.
Didn't we spend all of last time?
We did.
Chasing a failed prospect. Oh, what did we try? What was the name of the package that we had invite issues with?
We're gonna do Slack. And I figured out a way around it, but since,
all right, I registered.
Since we're IRC,
can I get some ops? Can I get ops before Jay Lee gets ops?
So give us all some ops. We want our ops.
What's kick ban again?
Time for the kick ban war that follows 3 minutes after everybody gets ops.
Start the botnet.
Kicking and trout slapping everywhere.
Hello, friend, said Pete.
Oh, Pete got off before I did.
And opt.
I'm third. Womp, womp. Better be third.
Womp, womp. All right, so anyway, we're very excited. I know that, you know, six or seven of you are also going to be very excited that we are IRCing again with only one episode down. Although, the WordPress plugin that allows me to add IRC connectivity to the website has also deprecated.
Oh, well, isn't that lovely?
Yeah, I was looking at around for. I was looking around for those.
Yeah,
and
they haven't been updated in 3 or 4
there's
years.
There's a cool like some web ones, like it's like Kiwi IRC or something.
Yeah.
It's a web based one where, but the only thing is, you know, you're using your web server resources. Instead of if it's like a Java client where it uses, you know, the end user's crappy Java and their resources.
So we don't have the easy peasy method of joining, but if you do have your own IRC client, you could go to irc.geekradio.com.
There's also a service I found that is a cloud IRC. I think it's cloud.
Hold on, IRC that uses the internet? No.
It's a cloudirc.org. And you can sign up for a free account, and you don't ever have to pay. So if you don't pay, it won't keep you connected indefinitely. Like, you'll time out after a while.
No idling.
And you can only have, like, 2 active connections that aren't to their IRC servers. But if you're just going to, you know,
get
on...
What is CloudFlicted? Is that you?
That's me on that system.
Oh, I see.
So is iFlicted. There are multiple Flicteds.
No, iFlicted is actually on my iPhone.
So far, it's only us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah. I was like, wow, there are a lot of people in the channel. No, it's just Flicted. If you don't have your own IRC client, you can also go download one. HexChat seems to be a free one across all platforms.
Or
Hex with an H.
Or MIRC if you want to go really cutesy.
Merck still wants you to register, though, doesn't it?
Really?
Yeah, you get like 30 days free, and then they're on you to register. And I've actually paid to register that a number of times over my 20 or 20, 30 years of IRC history. And I'll lose the stuff, and they'll lose, or I don't have access to like my old bcan at bcan.com email address or what have you. And I'm not going to register again.
Yeah, on Mac OS, I'd recommend either Colloquy is the
Colloquy
old.
Colloquy
is
the
old, nice one. Yeah,
is the old one. The one
it's
that
cocoa.
The one that I used forever and ever
Lime
is LimeChat. LimeChat's very nice.
Not to be confused with LimeWire.
Right.
Don't get LimeWire.
Application.
I like Kazaa for
LimeWire.
IRC.
LimeWire.
Is it Kazaa?
Was my Kazaa. First introduction to spyware.
Whoa, did you get spyware when
too.
You installed
that's,
some LimeWire?
That's how I discovered, I installed LimeWire, and I noticed things were not acting right, and that's when I became aware of all this add-on stuff that these softwares were putting onto your computer, or my computer.
Usually
time.
People have to buy an HP to get that experience.
I am patient zero. Yes. I may have created the problem that I spent so many years solving.
Was that Abitrack really worth it?
It's the reverse J. Lee maneuver. You installed J. Lee under yourself with spyware. something like that.
So yeah,
kinda,
of course.
So that's kind of like the Butterly effect.
The
Butterly.
Really, ow. Yeah, well, that worked. Huh. So, at any rate, yes, IRC, we've got it going. We're preaching to ourselves right now, but come on and join in the IRC. I mean, I don't care if it really gets used or not, if it's not really a thing.
We just have to have it.
It just needs to be there.
Yeah.
It's like...
Ophelia's going to wake up and not know where anyone went.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the dude taking her easy for all of us.
Yeah, I need to make sure that I put something on the website that talks about it.
And the Facebook.
And the
so
Facebook.
So, IRC.
Yeah, did you take all the old stuff down? Because I didn't see anything about IRC anywhere on the website.
I had the IRC page, and when the IRC went away in a fit of just dejection, I just deleted the page.
Okay.
And I went to go put it back, you know, and react and try to run the plugin, but it was so Java weird that all the browsers, if you use Chrome, it doesn't work. If you use Firefox complains, and there's a lot of, you know, this Java's, it's not, you
it's
know,
too
so
old or...
links.
It wasn't working right, so I just didn't like it, didn't look good. So I tried to find a new IRC plugin for WordPress, and all of them haven't been updated in a long time. The newest updated one is like 3 years old.
I can look at the web-based client. I can look. I mean, the thing is, you know, I could look at the web-based client. I might be able to install it on that server, and then we have a web-based client that's on the server. But I have to make sure that I can lock it down so they can't use it. Somebody can't use it to connect to other servers,
right,
or whatever. But if I can do that, then I might be able to put it on that same server, and then, you know, somebody can use the name of the server in a web browser to get to a client that will get them onto the server.
Start over? Do what now?
Just go download HexChat or get on AndChat for Android. I'm sure they're iPhone.
What is that?
IRC. AndChat is the one I like. AndChat. It's free in the Google Play Store.
AndChat.
It's the first one that pops up.
I like how the light reflecting on the table. Lee has brought into the studio some Soylent bars.
Oh, not probably not.
So tasty.
Well, Soylent, in my mind, has always been identified as a liquid.
People. It's people.
Yeah, first it was people.
Yeah, then it was a liquid.
Then it was a liquid.
And now...
Now it's a bar.
Now it's constipated.
I like how he's got... Lee has, like, this makes for great. At least got a little cup of water here, which I assume is in anticipation of these very Dharma-looking...
They're not that bad.
Yeah, they are.
A little bit, a little lost.
They have a little lost Dharma.
There was Dharma Initiative.
Dharma Initiative.
DARPA probably also needs
some more. That's more of a callback to just the original generic.
No barcode. No huge barcode. That's one thing that's missing. Otherwise,
did they come in a box?
They came in a box. Yeah, the box has the box had like 40 of them in there.
Where's your commitment?
They're 225 calories a piece. What's 225 times 40?
Don't ask me your science questions.
Times 40. That's 9,000 calories. It's over 9,000.
Whoa. Man, you know, I loaded the new iOS 10 on my phone.
Did it come out?
Yeah, yeah, came out yesterday,
huh.
And it's really weird.
I had
not seen
it. It makes just some odd changes, like the edit. There's no longer a thing like in your photos when you tap edit. There's just a little picture of some slider bars, which I guess you have to assume is what you're going to use to edit your photos, which it is. But it was like, where's the edit? Where's my edit thing? It's gone, and now it's there. And just weird things like that, like the way that you can... You press your fingerprint to it, and then it says go ahead and push to open up to the home screen instead of, like, it used to be you just put your finger on there and it would open it, which I guess is kind of good because I would put my finger on there and all my notifications would go away because it logged me into the phone, and now I don't have that problem anymore.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the new notification style. I don't particularly care for. There's a lot about it that's fine, I guess, but... There's a lot about it I don't particularly like.
Yeah, I'm not.
But it's like it's every update. There's a lot about this update I don't particularly like.
You wonder, was this a Johnny Ive joint, or is it just anybody who had an idea stuck it in there?
I'm sure Johnny Ive had something to do with it.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, although at some point, you know, you'd think he's got, because some of these changes are away from, seem to be away from what he was doing before. A lot more dark stuff I've noticed. It's a lot.
I heard that that's kind of the true of the Apple TV as well.
The TV or the Apple TV, like
the TV.
Apple, the TV that Apple was going to make, or
no,
TV?
The Apple TV thing. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I heard the next rumor, now that we know what's coming out of the next phone, is that they're possibly doing away with the actual physical home button.
That's so gone.
It's gone, man.
It's already gone?
Yeah.
Whoa. I'm late to the game again.
It's gone on 7.
Not cool. Well, I don't have an iPhone.
There's a circle there, but now it's like hitting an Android soft button.
It's taptic feedback now.
I'm telling you guys aren't going to have an OS pretty soon. You let them pull the headphone jack, home button's gone.
Next is the buttons that control volume.
You don't need pixels. Don't need a mic.
Then eventually the screen's gone.
Mm-hmm. Then we're just talking to each other.
It's just going to be a slab
of metal.
$700. I'm going to sell you this slab of metal that's 6 inches across and has an Apple logo on the back of it.
And that Jay Lee guy finally quit IRC. He left.
Did it log me out for a while?
Yeah.
I guess I...
Jay Lee quit.
He left the room.
Rage quit.
Damn you all! Hey, why can't I tag Lee R's in my Twitters?
I don't know. Who knows?
Must be an iOS thing.
Must be a new iOS 10 thing. I'm just not sure. All right, so anyway.
The bigger question is, why are you using the default Twitter client? Because it's terrible.
Because I don't pay for apps.
Judge much?
Okay, so I just got a message from the thing that said too many connections from this IP.
Flicked, can you reconfigure your IRC server?
Who's the admin?
Yeah,
who's got admin?
I dropped that number down. But I tried to make sure that I had enough, because I want to say I made it like 6, because I was thinking...
One.
How many Flicked are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So there's like 9
Flicked
for you.
I have 3, but one of them's not through here, so that's 2.
Uh-huh.
I only have 1 because my phone is actually not on Wi-Fi. So there should be 1, 2, 3, 4, unless Peter is actually using the one here.
I'm connecting directly from home. I was going to joke that I was routing all kinds of connections through the machine that's at KPFT, but no.
Yeah, so there shouldn't be, but I can look at that.
KD5 has made it to IRC, so we have an outsider.
Surely there's
probably because he's got an IP address that isn't ours.
Surely there's a magic command you can run with this magic IRC server to tell you how many connections are coming.
Are we gonna have to be?
Do you even admin,
man,
bro?
Man, IRC.
All right, so yes, that's the main thing is the IRC. We're so happy about that. But you can also visit us online at geekradio.com.
Cuckoo,
which is our
no longer. That bird is dead.
That bird has flown.
Beautiful plumage, though. I'll miss it.
I still think Groovehouse should just give us a random cuckoo every now and again.
Just do it, man.
Nobody will know why. After a while, nobody will know why it's happening, but they'll just know that that's a thing, too, that when it gets deprecated, we'll have to get another one.
another
person to say cuckoo. Yeah, if Groovehouse goes away, we'll have to get somebody else come in. We need you to come in and just spontaneously say cuckoo every now and again.
That was pretty good, Jay. You got
it down.
I get the job. All right.
You're hired.
All right, I'm looking forward to my new role in
the
Megalithic Corporation.
The magic of radio.
Yeah, there's a lot of magic here tonight.
We just
so.
Will continue not answering phones. No one will ever be the wiser if they don't have a Groovehouse. Maybe,
well,
maybe not. We'd miss him.
See, Groovehouse is to the phones what IRC is to participation. We don't care if it does anything. We're just glad it's there.
My wife just texted me and she says, y'all have been talking about logging in for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even.
So what's her nag threshold? Would she normally have called in after 20 minutes, or is
she
it...
probably did? Phone rang twice.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, visit us online at geekradio.com. We'll get some IRC goodness in there eventually, and of course that's where you can find out how to reach us and what's coming up in terms of events and download the podcasts and so forth. And
the max number of clients that this is. Overall, not from a single IP. The maximum of clients is 51. So we're an exclusive club. Like,
that's an odd number.
Not more than 51.
Why can't we ratchet it down to 42? What does 51 mean?
Couldn't we have gone...
Is that the 51% thing with a handgun?
55? Wouldn't that have been a better number? It's a geekier number. or like 64.
I think it was
1337
default. I don't think I changed that one.
That's the weirdest default ever.
51.
Hold on. What else did you leave default on this?
All right. All right, script kiddies. Come to our C server.
I did change the max nick length. I almost made it 8 because
no,
because
that's
what I that's what I like. I prefer that. But I didn't. I let it slide and made it 15.
See what happens when we get flicked at some power?
Dialing the sysadmin stuff back to 1971.
8's all you need.
I also dropped the max topic length down to the minimum, which is 80 characters.
Have you? How many channels can this IRC server support?
Well, right now, I think infinity, but I'm actually working on reconfiguring channel serve so that anytime somebody creates a channel that's not registered, this channel serve bot gets onto the channel, de-ops them, and kicks them off the channel.
So you're going to allow all comers, but you're just going to knock ones out that aren't on the registered channel. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
This is old school. This is the kind of IRC power that you longed for when you were a kid.
I did, man. When I was in college, I'm like, dude, how do you get to be an IRC op? Like, they would just hop into channels every once in a while and, like, kick everybody because, you know, griefers
were
taking over
the
channel.
Yeah, and, it's the digital version of that guy kicking sand in everybody's face.
How do you get to be an IRC op? Because I want to be one. This is back when there was only EFNet. Like, there was no other. Because the next one that sprouted up that I recall was Undernet.
Yeah.
That was the second one. And I remember when they split and Undernet, like I went to Undernet a couple times and I was just like, I don't know any of these people. It's not as interesting. So I went back.
I've got ops on Pound, our benevolent ruler afflicted, if anyone wants to come on in. The water's not bad. No bots to kick me out yet.
Yet.
It's just disconnected. Am I unable to...
Yeah, it says max number.
You joined. You're
max,
in there.
It says max number from a single IP is 5. So we should 1, 2, 3. We should be fine.
Can you count
it's
to five
of us?
All right. So I have to re-message the Nick serve to identify. All right. So anyway, let's just move on with other things. I'll play with IRC while Pete does the Technology Bytes InfoShot live from San Antonio. Take it away, InfoShot.
No, don't take it away, InfoShot.
No, why not?
Because not ready.
Because it's not ready.
Oh, I would have thought you'd have been standing. He's so mad with power, he forgot to exercise the actual power.
No, I stopped you from doing what you wanted to do.
Oh well.
Now you may do the info shot.
Well, I don't think we should anymore.
All right. I'm over.
Bite of the apple. La, 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 la. Take it away. Bite of the info shot.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, here's a not surprise. The lines are starting to grow outside of places where you can buy iPhones because the iPhone 7 comes out on Friday. So people, you know, basically it's a big tradition before the Friday thing. People line up at Apple stores and listen to Technology Bytes, at least to start their waiting. The big thing I'm thinking as we come up on the official, you know, where people get the iPhone 7 in their hands, is I wonder, does anybody have a guess, you know, what's going to be the complaint thing, the defect where everybody says, oh, well, now it's the iPhone 7 is going to fail? Because so far it sounds like advance orders are like crazy up from, you know, the this is not going to be the iPhone that doesn't sell, apparently, according to T-Mobile and others. So, but yeah, people are waiting in line. So if you were going to try and be towards the front of the line at the local Apple store, you may want to... you may want to head out there now. Sounds like the big things, people are really into the black phone and the jet black phone. The black phone is the flat black one, and then the jet black is shiny black that apparently scratches if you even look at it. It's so black that looking at it causes it to scratch, and Apple recommends already before they're even out on the street, Apple recommends that you get a case for it. So I know this sounds like bite of the apple, but it is news it's a newsy thing. In not so good phone news, I haven't mentioned this one before because the times when there was news about it didn't line up with when the show was on. But just in case you've been under a rock and have a Galaxy Note 7, Samsung Galaxy Note 7, yeah, there's problems. They have battery issues. You can't take them powered on an airplane, and you can't put them into your checked luggage, just so you know that. And now the New York Metropolitan Transportation Authority, says that Note 7 owners are, quote, urged against using or charging their phone on buses and trains. They want you to turn it off before you enter the station. It's not a formal ban, but, of course, you're not going to look real clever if anything happens while you're riding on Metropolitan Transit. So, yeah, Samsung has not been having a good couple of weeks because of this, and apparently their stock is down, and other bad things are happening to them. And then this one, I think this is one that is bad news initially, but overall, I think it's probably good news. And this one is that the new Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery, has been delayed until May 2017. And the reason it's been delayed, I think, is because they were trying to have it out for January. And if you followed it even vaguely, there's so little information about the show that I don't know that they really are ready to start making it yet, and it's September. So I think that they realized that that the effects, the special effects and stuff, both the practical, you know, real stuff where they have to build, you know, models and sets and things, and the CGI is going to take them a little more time than for January. They say, here's their quote is, quote, "We aim to dream big and deliver, and that means making sure the demands of physical and post-production for a show that takes place entirely in space and the need to meet an air date don't result in compromised quality." Although maybe they could have just done the, like, Lost in Space thing and had, you know, aluminum foil sets and cheap stuff. That might have had a kitschy charm. Before heading into production, we evaluated these realities with our partners at CBS, and they agreed. Star Trek deserves the very best, and those extra few months will help us achieve a vision we can all be proud of. So that's good, but you would think, you know, you'd think that CBS would have thought about this a little ahead, given that it's Star Trek's 50th anniversary year, that would not be a clever time to screw around with what time you launch your premiere your new Star Trek show. And then, okay, maybe we're overloaded in bad news. That's why I had the, like, if you're happy to get an iPhone 7, then that's why you, I put that first so that you could have some bit of good news. This one, interesting that it's an op-ed, or kind of an op-ed piece in Wired, from, Senator Ron Wyden and some others, pointing out an issue, which is, that the Justice Department is planning a vast expansion of government hacking. Under a new set of rules, the FBI would have the authority to secretly use malware to hack into thousands or hundreds of thousands of computers that belong to innocent third parties and even crime victims. The unintended consequences could be staggering. The new plan to drastically expand the government's hacking and surveillance authorities is known formally as amendments to Rule 41 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. And the proposal would allow the government to hack a million computers or more with a single warrant. Boy, that doesn't sound like any kind of overstretch of power. If Congress doesn't pass legislation blocking the proposal, the new rules go into effect on December 1st. So something would need to be done relatively quickly, and it is an election, you know, season coming up. The government says it needs this power to investigate a network of devices infected with malware and controlled by a criminal, what's known as a botnet. But the Justice Department has given the public far too little information about its hacking tools and how it plans to use them, and the amendments to Rule 41 are woefully short on protections for the security of hospitals, life-saving computer systems, or the phones and electronic devices of innocent Americans. So there's one to watch for. You may want to, if you're a person who wants to make your opinion known, you may want to contact your representative and see if they see if they maybe don't like the idea of being easy to hack, you know, whoever the Justice Department kind of wants, with just one warrant and any kind of connections. All of the articles that we use tonight and reference are up at geekradio.com. They're already up, so if you want to read more about any of the things we've talked about so far, there's a couple more stories in the info shot, but you can read along or study further or follow other links or whatever. Here's a nice one. You know, when you next time you go to an ATM, apparently the world's most sophisticated ATM skimmers are starting to appear in America. The new ATM card skimmer uses a technique called periscope skimming. It's been officially found installed in ATMs.
Straight up 8:30.
And there he goes.
8:30:58.
Not straight up 30.
8:31.
There you are, Pete. Welcome back.
No. I disappeared.
We now continue this
broadcast.
Disappeared
for about 15 seconds.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it's the people who are running the sophisticated ATM skimmers. I'll just start that one over because I think that's
down periscope.
Yeah, periscope skimming. Most card skimmers are designed to be installed over an ATM's existing card slot, you know, outside, to capture your account information as you use the machine. That's easy and less risky to install and retrieve.
Ooh!
Oh, there it is.
We're gonna hit that 3232 mark.
Double disconnect.
That's interesting. I think my internet might be down.
Inside an ATM, out of sight, connecting to both the motorized card reader and the circuit board where cardholder data is transferred to the rest of the machine's electronics to process transactions. So that's like internal hacking the ATM. They do require access to inside of the ATM via a key, but once installed, they can operate for close to 14 days and collect up to 32,000 card numbers before their battery runs out. They found one of these in, a recent non-public alert issued by a Connecticut Financial Crimes Task Force that was sent to banks, revealed a periscope skimming device was discovered inside an ATM in Greenwich, Connecticut in August, while a second was found in Pennsylvania in September. The good news is, at least for the time being, neither skimmer had a way to capture the user's PIN number to get transactions. It's suspected that both of these devices were being used for testing purposes, but you can assume that whoever was developing the hardware must surely have plans to get the rest of the info so that they can, I guess, what would the startup term be? They want to monetize their what they're learning. And then finally, this one, courtesy of Flicted and even more so Bruce Schneier, apparently over the past year or two, someone has been probing the defenses of the companies that run critical parts of the internet. The probes take the form of precisely calibrated attacks designed to determine exactly how well these companies can defend themselves and what would be required to take them down. He says that we don't know who's doing this, but it feels like a large nation state like China or Russia. And he goes into basically a little bit of detail. You know, if you want to take a network off the internet, the easiest way to do it is with a distributed denial of service attack, which a lot of people might be familiar with. It's basically an attack designed to overwhelm a site with so much data that it can't do its normal job and, you know, respond to its visitors. That's not a new kind of attack. It happens a lot from hackers, and criminals do it for extortion. There's an entire industry actually devoted to DDoS defense. Mostly it comes down to bandwidth. If the attacker has a bigger fire hose of data than the defender, then the attacker wins. The thing apparently he says that some of the major companies that provide the basic infrastructure that makes the internet work have seen an increase in DDoS attacks, and they've seen a certain profile of attacks, and they're larger than the ones they're used to, and last longer and are more sophisticated and look like probing. One week, the attack would start at a particular level of attack and slowly ramp up before stopping. Next week, it'd start at the higher point where it stopped before and continue, and so on, as if the attacker were looking for the exact point of failure. Schneier spoke to these companies under conditions of anonymity and said that, you know, that the deal is that with these attacks, apparently they've been very good at forcing the companies to use all of their defenses, which means that, of course, the attacker knows what kind of defense they can do. So last thing, one company told Schneier about a variety of probing attacks in addition to the DDoS attacks, testing the ability to manipulate internet addresses and routes, seeing how long it takes the defenders to respond, and so on. He says someone is extensively testing the core defensive capabilities of the companies that provide these critical internet services. So this could be cyber war prep. Sadly, at the end, he says, what can we do about this? Nothing, really. We don't know where the attacks come from. The data I see suggests China. This is according to Bruce Schneier, an assessment shared by the people he spoke with. On the other hand, it's possible to disguise country of origin for these sorts of attacks. The NSA, which has more surveillance in the internet backbone than everyone else combined, probably has a better idea. But unless the U.S. decides to make an international incident over it, we won't learn about it. But it is happening, and he says, and people should know. So, you know, it's one thing, you know, the big fear coming up was the, you know, lone wolf hacker guys, or, you know, the Mr. Robot type scenario. And it seems like we've gone a lot farther where this sort of nation state level of power coming along online to try and exploit or to, you know, gear up for at least build the skill set to attack. Is something that nobody really talked about before, and it seems to be this seems like it's out in the wild and it's happening, and so it makes one wonder what's really going on.
I need to
pull, and that's the news.
I need to pull my Kindle. I about maybe a year ago I started reading like a lot of like cyber warfare pamphlets and books and things like that that are like put out in Annapolis, and they're teaching this as military science now, and some of the stuff they're doing is like play by play exactly what the book said. So it's almost like someone took literally some pages out of some of the stuff that, you know, we started conjecturing about and started teaching a couple of years ago, and they're actually putting it in play. It's cool, though. The one part that I was hoping Pete would mention that he left out, there's so much to this whole thing, but Schneier was saying it reminds him a lot of the U.S.'s Cold War program, and we would fly high-altitude planes over the USSR to try and trip up the air defense systems so we could see what kind of defense systems they have. I mean, this is a very tactical probing of what we have, all the infrastructure, and it feels very, very warlike to me.
Which is why we put up our IRC server, because we figure it'll be the last thing standing when the...
Or are we the canary? Oh, we should call it canary.irc.failure.net.
What noise does canary make? Is it like cuckoo?
It wouldn't make any once the first Soviet
That's when it starts making noises.
When it stops right making noises.
It goes,
you know there's a problem when you don't hear it.
Ka-choo!
Ka-choo.
The walrus is Jay.
I am the Eggman.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Anyway, Flicted, stop taking down the internet. Is what.
There you go.
Mine didn't go down.
Scans are coming from failure.net.
somebody at my job said, well, somebody that I on the team I work with sent out the article from the Schneier, you know, that Schneier wrote, which I had actually seen yesterday. And one of the people at work said, oh, did you see that email that guy sent out? I'm pretty sure that's you. So my reputation precedes me.
Scary.
Which is hilarious because it's not really... Because
you're scary?
There's not really much truth to it, but it's kind of cool that people think it.
Sure. Whatever you say.
There you go.
Scary internet hacker man.
All right,
that means you've got the right look.
So I did go online and buy the new iPhone. So
which one?
Oh, you're so weak.
The 7 or the
weak
7 Plus?
The 7 Plus. And I'm only doing it for the camera.
Uh-huh.
Don't you have other cameras?
I do have other cameras.
But not this one. Not like this, not this one. Camera.
Well, you know, in the
there are many like it, but this one is yours. Mine, right.
I it's actually a win for me because, you know, I'm going to sell my old iPhone for probably a little over half of what I have to pay on contract for the new phone.
To Cynthia?
No.
Tech Tax.
Is your,
yes,
is
because your... selling to my wife makes money for all of us. It's a win, yes. Win, win.
Rinse and repeat. We're going to be millionaires.
Is your 6 unlocked?
Yes.
Well, you could eBay it for probably close to full price.
Yeah, I know. I could eBay it for, I mean, I'll have to see.
You said
it.
Half. You could sell it for most of what you paid for it, probably.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
But, they dropped the price on them, right?
The last one, I sold on eBay, well, I got about 2/3 of what I had invested into it back.
But the thing is, most of them nowadays are unlocked. Like,
right.
Well, what? Not if you're buying. If you do,
not
if you're AT&T. Buying for Verizon. Yes, if you're buying
really?
For AT&T, no.
I thought AT&T.
No.
Man, AT&T still sucks that much.
Oh
yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they will give you massive amounts of stick if
I'm
you try
so
to unlock it.
I'm so glad that I moved to T-Mobile a couple years ago.
I will tell you. I will
was
tell
always
you my,
mad at AT&T.
My secret weapon for reselling used tech is to buy the highest tech. Like when it comes to a phone, if
most
you,
memory.
If you buy the one with the most memory, buy the highest end one you can get.
And the one closest to black.
And the resale value will the resale value will hold true. Now, I have a question for the hive mind in here.
You ordered the rose gold and you wondered if that makes us doubt your masculinity.
I have no doubt you doubt my masculinity, Pete.
What's there to doubt?
It's all here, man. Man. Now, I have a question. So, you know, as I was paying moderate attention to the Twitter sphere regarding the release of the iPhone, our once and future co-host Dwight Silverman mentioned that he has gone to the lease side, the upgrade your phone every year.
Ah, yes.
And
the all of them have some program where you can do that.
So you have this program where you can basically make a monthly payment for the phone, which after 2 years will add up to the full price of the phone. But the benefit, as I understand it, is that you could just trade your phone in for the newest phone and just keep paying.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the provider, I think. Like, I think T-Mobile's is called it's called Jump, I think. And you pay a certain price, and it gives you the right at, I think, 12 months, you can turn in the phone you're using. They don't pay you anything for it.
Right.
You return it, and then you get the new phone, and you start making payments on it.
Right.
And it's like a lease.
You could do this every year, but you get no return on your equity.
Mm-mm.
At all.
Mm-mm.
So you're paying.
Well, the last one, if you pay it off, if you pay the 2 years, then the phone is yours.
Yeah.
Yes, but you pay full price.
But you can swap it at a year. So you can.
Yeah.
You basically, you've paid on the phone for a year, right? You've paid about half the value of the phone.
Right, which is what you can get
it
on contract
them,
for.
You give it to them for nothing. You get nothing back. You get no. And then you get the new phone and you start paying on it.
Right.
So you didn't have to pay the full price for that phone, but you also don't get anything out of it.
You don't get anything. You still spend, like on an $800 phone, you still spend about $400.
I think, although the Jump program may be a little bit cheaper.
Okay, but I was looking at the Apple program and the Verizon program.
Oh, yeah, because Apple's got their own buyback or trade program,
right,
too.
Right, so it looks to me like you spend half the value of the phone. And if you want to get a new phone, you can get one. But my plan, my idea, is I'm going to use this. I use this phone for 2 years, you know, so I don't mind being on the 2 year plan. But I'll get at least half or more of the value back of the phone if I want to go through the eBay thing. The other thing Dwight mentioned that he does is he sells his through one of those
buyback
programs, yeah, right, or whatever, which. I mean, I guess if you're not looking for a hassle, I mean, you'll get a couple $100, but you don't maximize what you can get for the phone. So I just don't see the appeal of that myself.
I think it's easy.
Time,
what, Pete?
Yeah, this time there's some interesting other options because I've been looking at it. T-Mobile and I believe Sprint have something where if you trade in like an iPhone 6 or 6S, and then, you know, 6S or Plus, you know, any of those models, that basically that you can trade that
one for one with an iPhone 7. Now, if you want more memory or you want the Plus, then you have to pay, you know, $100 kind of for each feature or memory level up. You pay that up front. But then you have the phone sort of free and clear, although they kind of backdoor it into a two-year contract. But you don't, you know, essentially if you're like iPhone 6 or 6S is paid off, you don't pay anything against the phone for that 2 years while you're using it. So that could be useful for some people.
Well, I think one of the things that was the only reason I even looked at it, because I kind of wrote that whole thing off, but I think the reason that Dwight was looking at it is because he thinks that something interesting is going to happen next year with the 10th anniversary phone.
It's kind of like that? Leasing
John
the car.
Scully was saying that. John Scully was talking about that in an interview with, I forget who, some TV news personality. They had him on there. John Scully, former CEO of Apple, former CEO of Pepsi, arguably somebody whose business decisions helped to drive the mid-90s Apple into the ground.
Yeah.
But he was saying that he's an iPhone fan, but he wouldn't buy this one. He would hold out for the next year one because
for the one
the
when
idea.
He's president again.
God,
the thing on the lease thing, I can see where more people might get into that because of, you know, and Scully. I mean, he makes him sound like an idiot because after so many phones, think about it. Every year, people buy an iPhone and they go, "Yeah, no, I'm going to make this one last. I'll use it for at least a couple years, maybe 3 years," and then the next one comes out, and there's a significant percentage of them who are like, "No, this new one is so cool. I've got to have the latest one."
Well, if I was going to do it, going back to the way that I'm managing my phones, if for some reason the 10th anniversary iPhone coming out next year looks like something I can't live without, I'd still make it be a better financial deal for me to sell my iPhone 7 Plus and then just buy that phone, I think.
Well, what if based on the smashing success of the 20th anniversary Mac, what do you think? What do you think the 10th anniversary iPhone's going to be?
I don't, you know, I don't know that it's going to be that big a deal. And of course the 10th and a half anniversary iPhone would probably be even better, but I don't know.
It'll be the 10S anniversary.
10S, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation that basically that the part of the reason why the design didn't really change, I mean, there's details of it, but the overall look and feel and that didn't, there aren't massive new features other than this kind of the camera thing and the button change, but the like real serious form factor changes, everybody thinks they kind of kept the iPhone 6S line look so that then that 10th anniversary one will be a big change from whatever.
But I saw an article that said that T-Mobile and somebody that their pre-orders were like four times what they'd been or something for the 7. So that they had never seen pre-orders as high for iPhones. And of course, not everybody had iPhones because for a long time only AT&T had them. But they were saying for people that sell iPhones, which I think maybe the 5S or something was where other people started selling them, maybe 5, that the iPhone 7 pre-orders were a lot higher, which I thought was interesting because I didn't really think that this would necessarily be a big cycle for them because it wasn't a big change.
Yeah, although we need to set up the squares for what day will the story come out that's the thing that's going to have a class action lawsuit that's wrong with the iPhone 7.
The blank gate.
And why Apple is going to fail and the iPhone is just going to go away forever. You know, because I've been hearing that one since like the iPhone 3GS, I think. They always come up with something. Oh, it's glass. I didn't realize glass would break if I dropped it. Oh, I got to sue you. Apple's a failure.
Well, now they'll sue because they would think that they'll sue when the 10th anniversary phone comes out that the iPhone 7 deliberately withheld features that were available that should have been released in this model, and people who signed a 2-year contract like myself will say it's unfair and we should get, you know, reimbursed for our heartache and our pain or something.
I will say something with the 6S that I've experienced that I've seen other people mention in passing that didn't happen to me with the 3GS or the 4S or the 5S that I had is that every once in a while, like a piece of facial hair or hair will get caught in between the glass and the metal, and it pull. Every once in a while, like when I'm talking on the phone, I hold it up to
You should investigate whether that's only the gray hairs or if that's regular hairs, because I don't know how you get like a regular
secret
hair.
It's a secret effect of the phone to make you look like Steve Jobs, ultimately. It's just very slow.
Patchy bald spots on your phone side. Yes. All right. So, yeah, at any rate, I'm kind of excited. I went ahead and ordered the 256 gig model. I'm interested in the camera.
That's a lot of gigs.
It's a lot of gigs. It'd fill up half of my MacBook Air just to back it up if it was full. But I like the idea. For me right now, the thing about upgrading phones is I intend to carry my photo library over to every phone and have a historical photo record of whatever I've shot with my phone. It's kind of cool now because it already goes back a couple of years. But as the more storage becomes available, I don't have to offload any photos. I've got all uploading to Flickr anyway as a backup, so I have unlimited storage on Flickr. I could upload my photos there. But my phone will have a historical record of every... And the way that I do photography now... You know,
with a camera,
like a normal person. But it's interesting because I take all the, you know, I do have there's a whole separate photo record of my travels, of my trips that are on my phone that I don't pay much attention to. I take a picture on the phone, post it to Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and move on. But I've gone back now and started to look at my archives of phone photos from my trips, and there's a whole other story being told there. And I'm kind of glad to have them. You know, they're not necessarily all that great quality photos, but I am excited about the new phone shooting RAW.
I was going to ask if you're going to switch over to that.
And that's another reason why I opted for the bigger giggers. So,
because your photos aren't going to be 2, 3, 4 megs now; they're going to be 25 megs.
12, 24.
Plus the JPEG preview.
Right. Plus the JPEG preview, but it'll be nice to have the RAW data there, and I'm very curious to see how it does in low light and that kind of thing. I'm pretty excited about the camera. And it's a win for me because I haven't bought a new camera in a couple of years, which is weird for me, but I haven't bought a new camera in a couple of years. And so I thought I'll just upgrade my phone and I'll get this new kind of camera thing and it'll scratch both itches.
Would this be enough to get you to buy one or more of those Zeiss like clip-on overlens things, or do you think those are still gimmicky?
I think they're too gimmicky still. I think they're still too gimmicky. What I'd like, there's another camera that DxO puts out that connects to your phone that looks pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Or the Sony lens that's like a free lens and it tethers to your phone, but it transmits the image and uses your phone to store it.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting. I'll have to show that to you. But no, not enough to go to the gimmicky lenses. All my gimmicky lenses cost, you know, a couple $1,000s.
Right. Those real lenses.
Real gimmicks. The gimmick being that they produce quality images.
Right.
And, you know, you could get half the image for a third of the price with those gimmick lenses.
If you had that Sony lens like that, you could be like the witches that have the one eye that they have to share.
Oh yeah, bubble toilet trouble.
Yes,
that may be a different play.
It's the year of the witch.
Yeah, when Jay said that he hadn't bought a camera and he was buying a phone instead, a Sony photography executive shivered and felt the disturbance in the force, like his future bonuses had just disappeared.
Yeah. Well, there's two cameras out by Sony right now, and I want them both that I want, and I can't choose between them, so I'm trying to figure out if I could justify buying both.
Is one of them a webcam?
No.
Logitech. These are the new top end Alpha DSLRs.
They're the top end the E mount, the A7R2 and the A7S2. I have the A7S now.
These are mirrorless, right?
Yeah.
We'll know he's gotten both if his next vacation is just photos of his backyard and down the street. It's a staycation, but I'm photographing it with these great cameras.
But if you get two cameras, you can use them to take pictures of each other.
Well, I have three cameras now. I mean, it's not like I'm hurting for cameras, but and I've got a phone.
Aren't you hurting for cameras?
You do bullet time with your own cameras.
I need to go fund me. Yeah, I need to go fund me. That would be the way.
Or just get more of your pictures stolen and then eventually compensated.
Well, you know, that program has worked for me lately. I just sold a photo to CBS that I found they were using. I just pure luck of the draw that I even found it, but I found that that the Price is Right used one of my photos for one of their prizes. Not the photo itself, but to represent the prize, which is a trip. This photo stolen from the internet is yours if the Price is Right.
I bid $1.
I bid stock photo.
I bid
I bid cease and desist.
I bid DMCA.
There you go.
So yeah, so that was kind of cool. You know, just through pure luck of the draw, found that they were using this photo, and had my legal team contact CBS, and we negotiated a contract, and we're everybody's happy.
Sweet.
But you know, it's kind of weird, the whole copyright thing. You know, if you try to sell your photos, nobody wants to buy them from you, but if they steal them from you, you can go back in behind and clean that mess right up. Sometimes you get a bigger mess.
You should make your stuff easier to steal.
I was just going to say.
A little more searchable, yeah. Indexable.
Well, my philosophy is that, you know, by having my stuff online, yes, it does. A lot of it does get stolen, and I'll never see any revenue off of it. But on the other hand, by not having the exposure and having it out there, I wouldn't sell any of it at all anyway. So I'd have all my intellectual property and no money to buy more camera gear. Or I kind of put stuff out there, hope that most people do right, people that don't do right. I mean, I can't – there are hundreds and hundreds of travel websites in China and Russia that are using my travel photos for these travel agencies that they're.
I bet they're pretty responsive if you email.
I have a belief that the language barrier is probably the only thing keeping me back from recovering funds from places like Alibaba.
I can tell you some Russian. Yeah. To tell them. Oh, yeah.
That will net me big profits.
Yeah. All right. Write this down verbatim.
Write this down. You need a Cyrillic. I'll just copy and paste this.
There you go.
All right. So anyway, that music tells us we have to take a short break, take care of some station business. So we'll take a short break to take care of some station business. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Yeah.
Have you thought about owning an electric or hybrid car? National Drive Electric Week, September 10th through 18th, is a nationwide celebration to heighten awareness of today's widespread availability of plug-in vehicles and to highlight the benefits of all-electric and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. They are fun to drive, are less expensive to operate, and more convenient to fuel than gasoline vehicles. Come talk to numerous electric car owners on Saturday, September 17th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the IKEA store located on Katy Freeway, just outside West Loop 610. This free event is presented by Plug In America, the Sierra Club, and the Electric Auto Association. This is KPFT Houston.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. And participating in your company's matching gift program is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1, make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2, contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses. Then step three, fill out the employee portion of the form completely and send that form to KPFT Attention Matching Gifts at 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. So help out your community radio station today. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites.
Yay, we're back. Welcome back, everyone. More Technology Bites. Did it auto-op you?
No, I need ops again.
Yeah, you know, I made you all owners, but I wasn't sure if...
you've got to set up one of the levels in there.
No, so did you identify?
I already identified. Okay. So once you identified, it should auto-op it and set up to do that.
I thought the owner had that role to get auto-op, but maybe not. I'll have to look.
Let me message Chanserve op. Let's see.
We're back to the IRC conversation. This is good radio.
Access denied. I cannot op the channel.
All right. Well, we're going to continue to work the bugs out of our IRC, but we're also going to continue with the show. So, yeah, GoFundMe camera. That's what I need. That would be awesome.
More cameras for Jay.
Yeah. You know,
cameras for the camera.
I don't know which would be a better use of my one. I mean, more than likely, any GoFundMe that I set up is going to result in absolute failure. But
we'll give you a buck.
Assuming one was going to be successful, I wonder if I should do it to get me a camera or travel. Yeah, see, I don't know.
Well, but you already have three cameras, but you have no travels, so you should get a travel.
I should get a travel. Right. I should get a travel camera package where I, you know, I need a sponsorship from Sony.
You need your set up a Patreon for you.
If so, you know, Sony out there needs to say, hey, Jay Lee can take our latest, greatest cameras and take pictures and we'll post them on our website for free, but he gets to keep the cameras or something.
Well, you need to become a member of the tech press and get in good with Sony and Canon, and whenever they do new equipment release cycles, they'll throw cameras and travel at you, as long as you're ethically okay with accepting that kind of thing.
No, that I think there's already enough photography travel websites out there that I'm not going to draw the interest of them. Now, I could probably be the king of maybe Pentax or something like that.
Old school stuff.
All right, so we're going to have another hour of Technology Bites on IRC.
Maybe. We'll be talking about our servers and stuff.
We invite you to join the IRC at irc.geekradio.com.
Cool.
But let's do another segment. Does Flicted play the music or does Pete?
That is not me.
Are you just on strike today?
Is Pete still there?
I don't know.
Pete still there?
I don't hear him.
That's not
only
my
voice
that's
him
not,
on IRC.
That's not my fault.
That also is not Flicted.
Move the slidey. Is the slidey all the way down?
Yeah, it's good. It's
not my job, man.
It's the Pete lever in the off position.
The cantilever, the pizza lever.
Ooh. Oh, you know what?
What?
We hung up on him.
Is he there now?
Ago?
Pete?
I'm here.
Oh! What did you do?
Slider was all the way down.
Well, the slider was down, but it wouldn't have mattered because the button wasn't on.
Oh, the button.
I was looking because V-Cart, so one of the other sliders right next to it, which was the last thing I played, was on and up, so I thought that was him, but it wasn't. He was the one next to that one.
Radio sounds complicated.
Radio's hard.
Yeah,
you missed out on my suggestion, Jay, that if you're going to do a GoFundMe, you have to market it the right way. You need to say that you want people to give to your GoFundMe.
Here's 10 bucks.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it. I want you to do it yourself.
All right, but I guess now it is time for another segment.
It is time!
Press a button.
Bite.
And now all the iPhone 7 there's no rumors. No, actually, right now, the biggest things are and this one, I'm not going to go into super depth on any of these because you can just go in. If you're into them, you can either read them at geekradio.com or, you know, go download it. iOS 10 is out and, you know, Jay has downloaded it and installed it. I've downloaded and installed it. Looking at Ars Technica, Andrew Cunningham has reviewed iOS 10 and we have the link to that. And his conclusion is iOS 10, there's no reason not to update. So, you know, a lot of people maybe take the, you know, kind of wait to see if there's any issues when a new iOS comes out. It sounds like this one is pretty clean, and the general consensus from the people who've already downloaded and installed it is that it's worth it to do. I've seen other articles, I didn't link these, but apparently like the iPhone 5 and 5C benefit mightily from it. Apparently there are some enhancements in iOS 10 that get you a better experience with those older phones. You know, given I think that the iPhone 4S can't, or earlier can't, take this update, so they're kind of EOL'd on that one. End of life, they're not supported going forward. And then there were a couple other operating system updates, not the big one, the Mac. I don't believe they said, even though it was rumored ahead of time, I don't believe they said when the Mac OS 10 Sierra release is going to come out. I think that the general consensus is that it's going to be pretty soon. It's in the next 2 to 4 weeks, but they released iOS 10 is out. They released TV OS 10. So if you have an Apple TV, if you have a fourth gen Apple TV, it's an update that's got new features such as YouTube Siri search, a new dark mode, and a new single sign-on setup process. So that if you've got a fourth gen Apple TV, then you may want to take that update. And then the other one is WatchOS 3 has come out as well. That came out yesterday. The update operating system includes battery life enhancements and speed improvements to the Apple Watch, not just the new one, but the one that was already out. A user's favorite apps will be kept in memory. Background updates will pre-cache data, and apps will launch instantly on the new OS. Also included are new customizable watch faces, including a new fitness-focused watch face that presents activity-focused rings at all times, along with a new Minnie Mouse watch face. So that might just be enough for you to want to get that update. The new operating system also includes a fix that makes it easier to transition between watch faces with a quick swipe. WatchOS 3 does still require the user's Apple Watch to be paired with an iPhone for full functionality. So there's that. That has not changed. And then last, this was sort of the kind of most interesting, unexpected change, I guess. I found this from Wired. One of the big ones is the ability to run apps inside the iOS native messaging client, iMessage. A lot of them are stickers, but there are some other popular apps that come with add-ons that let you run some functions or even an entire other app inside an iMessage chat. You can play a game, make an e-payment, or decide on a restaurant and make a reservation, all without leaving your chat. Wired has their 11 apps that they say you should download first. I'm not going to do all of them, but things like there's a GIF keyboard where you can search for GIFs and drop them into chats. Yeah, so you can drop animated GIFs into your chats and make them that much more animated and interesting. Super Mario Run stickers. So you can put them into your iMessage chats. Star Wars stickers. You can send a winking Lando Calrissian to compliment some lulls, or watch a stormtrooper, or match a stormtrooper helmet with your white tux in your wedding photo. So there's that. City Mapper. This one actually sounds like it could be useful. Share your current location with just a couple of taps. Send a pin centered on your beach blanket, or tell a friend which table is yours in the massive beer garden. So basically it's sort of a where am I kind of thing, but with a little more,
little more going on. Words with Friends. I don't know if you people have played, if a lot of people out there have played the kind of not Scrabble, but very like Scrabble. Apparently, you can start new games with anyone on your contact list and then play words on those games all within a chat. Might be useful to some. Confide. There's one. Confide protects your conversations with end-to-end encryption. It also has screenshot protection and a feature that deletes messages after they've been read. ESPN has an app that let you send friends scores of specific games. The Weather Channel, there's one that's a poll, you know, that's pretty obvious what it is. A poll that lets you create and deliver simple polls quickly and easily. Open Table is the restaurant one. So I think the cool part with that is Apple obviously had not been very open to letting others extend their apps or a lot of elements of the iPhone other than having a separate individual app. And now they're opening up where messaging, where iMessage at least, and some others are letting you do more stuffs. So they may be fun. And then, of course, you know, because the sticker ones, I mean, they're free. And I'm sure you'll be bored with them within about 45 minutes. But again, they're free, so there's that. And that's the bite of the apple.
So did you notice? It took me a minute to figure it out, but it used to be on the iPhone, on the previous version of the iOS, you could swipe to the right to get the numeric login on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can't.
You probably could if you disabled. Touch ID.
But I figured out how to do it. What you do is you, if you press the home button with a finger that doesn't have your print embedded.
Oh, then it goes right.
Then it goes to the lock screen with the numeric entry.
Yeah.
Although the thing that's changed is one of the things that's changed. I've got an iPad Mini 2, so it doesn't have the Touch ID. You know, before you'd push the button and it'd wake it up. And then you had to do the swipe right thing. You had to do the swipe on the screen to get it to go to the
right
to the pin entry. Now, essentially, when you push the button, then it goes
to the pin entry.
It wakes up, and you push it. I guess you push it again, and then it's got the pin screen.
Well, what I like about
changed it because I picked up my. You know, I got used to it. I pushed the button, picked up my finger to do the swipe, and nothing happened. You know, it wasn't there, and nothing happened. And then I pressed the button again, and it worked.
Well, the thing on my phone is that I have it keyed to, you know, to my thumb, which is what I always hit the home button with. But the problem was that, you know, if I woke up the phone and I had notifications, I just wanted to see the notifications, the fingerprint would go ahead and bring me to the home screen and wipe out all the notifications. So I'd have to go fish them out. But now if I put my thumb on there, it picks up the fingerprint, and then I press the home button and it opens up the phone.
Right, right.
So that way
at least it doesn't blow your notifications.
Right, so I can wake up the phone, see my notifications, but I have to press the home button one more time to have it go ahead and take me to the home screen.
You're supposed to buy a watch if you want the notifications. Jeez.
You know, I just want to see.
You're supposed to drop another, you know, because there's the killer is have you, you know, the total when you buy the if you kind of do the full Apple environment. I've seen some articles that tallied it up, and we are getting into like fairly decent laptop territory when you get a fully loaded iPhone 7 Plus, and you know, then if you add the watch and some of the other stuff, it's not a small purchase, even spread over 2 years.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well,
plus you still come to the fact that the watch is. You're not just buying the watch by itself. That's got to come with the phone. Otherwise, it doesn't really do anything for you.
Yeah, so your full outlay. I mean, because the new watch, I guess there were some bargains, although they seemed to get snapped up pretty quickly. Over the weekend, Best Buy was selling some of the low end, the like sport,
right,
Apple watches for under $200. I saw them as low as $189. With a band.
Yeah, you know, that's a neat piece of hardware, I guess. I'm just not, I mean, it needs
I
to
almost
be...
wondered if they were going to keep the old one and have that lower price to help to get people in, you know.
Nope.
Just like they did with the other, but no, it's pretty much by the, whatever, $500
Apple Watch or nothing, or a used one from a bum.
It needs to be an independent piece of hardware. It needs to function on its own. It needs to not need the phone. And ideally, it needs to also be a phone, or at least and let you do phone calls and everything from the watch. You know, it needs to be like the Dick Tracy style wrist communicator, and it needs to be self-contained and not dependent upon a phone to work. That's going to be the tipping point. You get there, they'll sell, you know, buku of them, but until we get there, I think it's going to be a curiosity.
I think that the quickest way to get that is somebody, I need to invent a gauntlet type wristband that you can mount an iPhone SE on just right on your wrist, because it would probably fit. It's the smaller form factor. And you'd look kind of sci-fi.
I want a shoe phone.
Yes.
It'd be the biggest watch screen you could have.
Apple missed it by that much.
I want to know when they're going to put a phone in a football so that I can call people and be like, honey, you're never going to guess what I'm calling you on.
Well, you'd have to subscribe. They'd have to start putting like web apps on paper.
Well, I will say
mail it to you every month.
You know, I always said this before they made it actually kind of work on the iOS, but I always thought that you should be able to make phone calls from your iPad.
Mm.
And now you can, because it will connect to your phone over
Wi-Fi.
Right,
but you still got to have a phone for it.
Yeah, I know. It's baby steps. But it just seemed ridiculous to me that if you're sitting out by the pool or whatever and you're reading on your iPad,
right,
that your phone rang, you had to go find your phone. It should ring on the iPad, and now it does. So it's kind of cool. All right.
Well, and I think you can, if you have Google Voice, you can actually make phone calls from your iPad. I think that'll let you do the actual phone call through it. You have to obviously have to be on Wi-Fi or on a network, but
right.
I mean, I know you, obviously if you have Skype and you have like the Skype out where you have a phone number, you can do that too.
No, but I always thought that, you know, if I'm out by the pool playing with my iPad, my phone's going to ring, you know, and I want to be able to answer my phone. So why do I have to go find my phone to answer it? So the watch is, it also takes you to that as well. But I agree that the watch should be like the iPad. Ultimately, it does everything except make phone calls. Now you can pair it with a phone and it'll make phone calls. But the watch kind of doesn't do anything unless it's tied to your iPhone.
I guess the Apple, there was one rumor. I didn't put an article in on it, but that because it's kind of on the very lowest level of rumors, which is an Apple patent filing, which could mean they just thought that it'd be interesting, and so they threw the patent out there, but they're not going to build it. But one of the things was putting it, which it seems obvious, but putting a cellular modem in an Apple laptop, in like a MacBook. You know, the skinny, not the old school thing, but the really skinny, lightweight, super thin MacBook type thing. And it's one of those that you kind of wonder why they haven't done it already. And so the rumors are maybe they're working on something like that. You know, given that, you know, like the big iPad, the iPad Pro, the 12-inch one, you know, their whole idea is it's practically a laptop and you can have, you know, LTE. I'm sort of surprised they haven't yet come out with a laptop that you can't put a SIM card in and have the LTE type connection, and then you've pretty much got internet everywhere if you know live in the zones that have service.
Yes,
right.
Well,
they did, and given the cost of the iPads, it would be competitive. Maybe that's part of their deal.
Didn't Dell do that for a while? Put in like a SIM, the ability to do. Cellular data from your laptop without having to use a USB stick.
Yeah, they had those packaged up for a few models, and they just kind of evaporated.
Yeah, kind of went away.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. But now I guess they're doing cars that will have a SIM card in there, so you have your car becomes a hotspot. It's a lot of I haven't really looked into it, but I saw one of the commercials for like Chevy or something like that. The car is a hotspot.
Oh yeah, they've got that. There's a bunch of manufacturers that have that. Audi, I think, has been doing that for a while.
Now, do you have to get like a whole other account, or can you get friends and family? Can you get like Ford and family?
It depends.
Can you just add a second device like you would an iPad, but it's your car?
Yeah.
$10 a month to give your car data.
Unfortunately, the car people usually it's tied to them, so it's like you got to pay their service. So it's tied. It's kind of like.
you know, it's like the, you know, when you push the button and they have a customer service on the other end of it, OnStar and all the other ones,
right,
where you get where yeah, they're buying blocks of data from Verizon or whoever, but you have to pay them for your access to your, for the data to work or belong to some, you know, service that they do.
I guess
I'm sure at some point somebody will hack that one so you can just use.
Well, hasn't somebody hacked like a USB MiFi or something like that where you could put that in your? I guess you could put that. You wouldn't even have to hack. You could put that in your car, so you could have a MiFi hotspot plugged into USB power in your car. You get your broadband signal that way, and then you could just connect to that when you get in the car and have that as your hotspot.
Maybe.
Yeah. The only big positive I could see in for the car side versus the MiFi kind of thing is obviously they can go, they've got the antenna stuff and they may be able to get better reception in more circumstances, but you know, the price difference, it doesn't justify it, but that's the only thing I could see that might be compelling.
Actually, it's just it's a glorified version of OnStar. It's like, OnStar, send email. Okay, go ahead and begin typing.
You say they have.
You can tell which ones have it because they have a Pringles can on the antenna.
Yeah, just dictate, please.
For the Wi-Fi.
Speaking of Pringles can antenna, the Cantenna made an appearance on Mr. Robot.
Sure did. Although he went about making his pretty quickly and shoddily, I thought.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
What, you don't think he was so good at it that he could just knock it out like that?
He it just a, looked. I don't what? Think he I didn't measure much. Episode. He didn't. I mean, I get it, but it just looked.
Are
like,
we? Are
it
we
could
missing
have been
the finale? Like right now?
Is it the finale or is it the second?
It's part one of the two-part finale.
Was that last week's episode?
This was last week. Yeah.
I haven't seen that. I've lost interest in the show.
Well, spoilers.
You think he's gonna eat some chips?
You've lost interest in the show because you haven't watched it in a week.
I haven't watched season two, but I guess now what we're going to end up doing is just waiting, and then we'll just binge the whole thing as soon as we can find it.
Yeah, I have to wait for some other way to watch it.
Yeah, I'm sure that
I've been watching. Yeah, I actually paid to watch last week's.
You did.
At Amazon Prime, you can pay to see an episode because I don't have cable.
See, I don't want to do that because I want to get a Blu-ray version of the entire season with extras. Mm-hmm. I don't want to buy, you know, the like Amazon or iTunes version of like the whole season and then just have digital copies out in the ether of just the episodes. I want a physical copy of Blu-ray. I want extras. I want the inserts and anything else that might come with it. So I want to pay for it twice. I don't want to pay for all the episodes to have digital copies and then go out and buy the Blu-ray. I'm sure they would love for me to do that, but I think that's BS. So.
And so you don't care if somebody accidentally tells you that that Elliot's actually the CEO of E Corp. Oh wait, I shouldn't
say. Or whatever.
And just ruins the whole season for you. That was the best spoiler I could think of. That is totally impossible.
Elliot,
or is it?
It was a spoiler.
He was in our hearts all along. That's what happened.
I must say that the watch, you know, and totally non-spoilery is. Having watched up to this point, watched, you know, 10 episodes, I don't know where they're going. I mean, usually you can kind of, you get a feel that this far, you know, before the finale, you kind of get an idea of where they're going. And So
last week, like, just threw it off the rails?
I don't know that it ever really got on the rails. You know, they had a few episodes, and then suddenly it's like, oh yeah, that was kind of different than what you thought it was. And, you know, again, I'm trying to be very non-spoilery.
I think what's going on is that
surprise, and you get there's a surprise, and it changes what you think about everything. And you know, turns out that Bruce Willis has been dead all along.
you know what's awesome though is that I was Google searching for something, and there's two Reddit subreddits for Mr. Robot, and I don't remember what I was searching for, but I was searching for something, and one person. After the first episode of this season said, you know what? I think this is what's going on. And here's like all these reasons why I think this aligns with what I think is going on. And he completely nailed it. Like completely. Like first episode out of the gate, like said what the situation really was. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, because I didn't guess.
A lot of people.
It still has not gotten onto a track where, you know, just to on a different track. You know, if there's a protagonist and he's up against his opponent or whatever, and as the, you know, episodes go by, there's the chess match between the two of them. You know, one is succeeding more than the other, or the bad guy strikes back. The Empire Strikes Back, or whatever, and you get the arc. You know that it's going to come down to the confrontation at the final episode, or whatever. This doesn't have any of those kinds of press. You know, my wife and I, between the two of us, it's one of those where if one of us misses a detail that turned out to be really important, you know, that can kind of key you to the rest. If one of us misses it, the other one will usually get it, and we don't have that click never has happened. On Mr. Robot so far.
I think what's going on right now is that no one knows what's going on. I mean, even Ellie is confused about what's happening. There's confusion. Confusion abounds.
I just hope they don't do the Lost thing, though, where they just keep adding mystery on mystery, and then it's like, oh, yeah, now we're done. Canceled.
Oh, he's dead.
Plane crash.
There actually was, I don't remember if it was in the DEF CON panel. I've watched a number of, like, panels where...
You've watched all the DVD content already, haven't you?
This was the stuff on YouTube, so...
That's what they'll put on there.
But, you know, there actually, during one of those, and I don't remember if it was the DEF CON one or if it was one of the other ones at some point, like, that actually came up, and Sam... it wasn't the DEF CON one, I guess, because Sam Ismail wasn't at the DEF CON one, because I think it was Sam that said it. But they said, no, you know, there's a specific story arc before this was ever written that was... planned, and you know it's kind of three parts, which may or may not fit into three seasons, but it's three parts, and so there's a definite storyline. And they specifically said, like, I don't remember if the person who was moderating the talks brought up Lost, or if the person, like the Mr. Robot person talking about it, brought up Lost. But they said, no, I, you know, that was one where I think it got away from the writers. Mm-hmm. Like, and they didn't mention it, but I remember when people were talking about Lost, they said that the people doing Lost kind of had maybe four seasons. I don't remember how many seasons it was, but it was one more than it should have been.
Successful.
Yeah. Cause they originally said, okay, we've got a story arc and we're going to hit this fourth season and that's where it's going to end.
But wait, money.
Yes. Yeah. And exactly. The broadcasting company came to him and said, man, this thing's doing really well. We want you to do another season. And so they basically had to stretch out this ending that they had for this one season to a whole nother season.
Yeah, and that's the part that bothers
Gilligan.
Me. That's the part that bothers me. I mean, because, yeah, I can totally sense in watching Mr. Robot that it's being retooled to be longer than it was originally intended.
He said that he has specific stuff he wants to do, and he's doing it, and he isn't. He isn't going to stretch it out for no reason they did with Lost.
I think at the end... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think at the end it's all going to be like a big computer, I guess, simulation in Elon Musk's head. I'm going to go, actually, I think what you did before, I'm going to go out and like register all these, you know, register all these different, you know, Reddit handles and stuff, and then go out and every possible ending. And then in like 6 months, flick this and like, hey, B Canon 1272-149B, nailed it. He called it from season 2, episode 10.
He was the one who said that it all turned out to just be an 8-bit cartridge game from the 80s.
Yes.
So you're saying that the panels you've seen indicate that what we're seeing on Mr. Robot is the storyline he intended.
As intended, yeah.
Prior to the release of even season 1.
Yes.
That's good. A little weird, but good. Yeah.
I mean, now it's... And the other thing is that, you know, the first season, he directed a few, and then, like, other directors directed some. But he was also the showrunner. He was, man, I don't know. I don't know if that guy sleeps, like, because this season he's like, you know what? I think I can do the directing myself. So he directed all the episodes for this season and the showrunner and
season 3,
everything.
Acting.
It's all going to be acted by him.
All the extras too. this one, sort of weird trip through the uncanny valley. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the game called Until Dawn.
No.
It's a movie like game. You have a lot. It's a lot of cut scenes, but then there are points where you can where you have choices and where you control the characters. But there's also a lot of, you know, they actually mo-capped actors and actresses doing it. It's kind of, you know, horror deal where they're up at a lodge in the isolated lodge in the mountains, and there's some kind of psycho there type story. And the only reason I'm mentioning it is that the odd creepy guy main character of it is played by Rami Malek, the lead actor in Mr. Robot.
Interesting.
And so I had seen the, you know, when the YouTube, when, you know, the playthroughs, the kind of, you know, where different, I don't know what you'd call them, YouTube celebrities played through the game. I had seen it and hadn't clicked. And then my daughters were rewatching some of them, and I saw him, and I heard his voice first, and then it's like, look closer, and it's like, that is him. That's why he looked sort of vaguely familiar when I first saw the show.
That's Josh Washington.
Since it's mo-capped and digitized, it's got a bit of that Uncanny Valley feel, but it's clearly him. And you know, I mean, he's in the credits, so. But, yeah, a little different. I guess that's what he did. That was the thing he did before Mr. Robot, was this game.
Speaking of games and stuff, there is a British game show that I've caught wind of, and it's had their second episode, and you have to struggle to get British television
here. Number Wang.
Yes, well, it's no Number Wang, but it's a show called Go 8-Bit, and it's hosted by Dario O'Brien, who's got this really thick Irish accent, and he's very hard to understand. But the whole intro of the show is 8-bit graphics, and they do this. And the idea of the show is that there's the host, there's the game master, who's this woman who's a gaming nerd, who's really a gaming nerd, a British gaming nerd. British gamers are even weirder than Americans. And then there's two people that are, you know, team captains that are on every week. And then there are guests.
Are they celebrities?
They're celebrity game captains. Okay. And then they have celebrity guests.
Celebrities.
Nice. But the idea of the show is that they start off with an old game. They'll bring up a classic game, and one of them was I can't even remember what it was now, but it was an 8-bit game. Oh yeah.
Zelda.
It wasn't Zelda, it was Chicken Hatch or something. It was based on
Chicken Run?
It looked a lot like Donkey Kong, but it was chickens.
Oh, I was going to say, Chicken Run is the Activision version of Frogger.
Okay. But at any rate, what they did, one of them was Tetris, and like they had the teams play each other, but the way that they did it was that one person had the controls, was blindfolded. And then the teammate had to tell them left, right, flip, 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 flip. And they played it out like that. But the most recent episode, they went through and they said, you know, what's your favorite game of all time? And we'll play that. And the one guy who was really a gaming nerd, he said his favorite game of all time was Portal 2. And so they...
What?
Yeah, he's... They say,
good game.
What? You don't like Portal 2?
I never played it.
Oh, I thought you were a big Portal fan. The cake
no, Portal. Yeah, I thought Portal was cool. I never played Portal 2. I never
you
played should. Portal. I just thought it looked cool.
Yeah, well, it's a very cerebral game anyway.
I mean, I like GLaDOS,
right?
But the gameplay is interesting too.
Yeah, well, they played against each other through a level that was created for them to play this, but it's an interesting concept for a game show if you're a gaming nerd, because these people...
They should have picked a really old game though, because Portal 2 isn't really 8-bit.
No, but they go through 8-bit games like Tetris and things like that and Super Mario Brothers, and they come up to the 80s, the later 80s, early 90s, like Street Fighter and things like that.
Gauntlet.
Yeah, it's everything, but it's just the whole gaming spectrum.
Mortal Kombat.
A celebrity is about to die.
Whoa.
Anyway, that's
Mike Tyson Punch-Out.
There's previews for Go 8-Bit. If you go onto YouTube, you can see previews for it. If you like it, it can be found.
My favorite game is Wizard of War.
What is Wizard of War?
It was a four player game, right?
No, that was Gauntlet.
Gauntlet.
Wizard of War was a a really old. It was pre Pac-Man, stand-up arcade game, one or two player, and it was set in a maze. It was one of the very first games that had speech synthesis.
That looks like an arcade game.
Yeah, it was.
And they weren't wizards. It was a guy with a laser gun.
No, but the Wizard of War is the guy you're fighting. Like, you're fighters, and the Wizard of War was one of the bad guys that would pop up and shoot lightning bolts.
And it's W-O-R, right?
W-O-R, not W-A-R.
War. Google will figure it out for
you. I love Wizard of War. That was my favorite game. I spent so much money on that. My ringtone right now, if you call me, is actually Wizard of War. It's gameplay from Wizard of War.
Nice.
Which almost nobody gets when it plays. However, my text tone, I don't know that anybody's actually ever gotten it, but my text tone, I've probably had half a dozen people get it when it goes off. It was funny at DEF CON this year. While I was at DEF CON, it went off and somebody heard it and they immediately were just like, Joust! Because it's the pterodactyl from Joust.
A game I haven't seen in forever that would have been arcade only was remember the old Star Trek game that you sat in?
I remember that, but I don't remember anything about it.
You sat in sort of a captain's type chair, and
did you have to fight V'ger?
And flew around. The big cool part was when you sat down in the chair, then they had Leonard Nimoy had recorded it where it's "Welcome aboard, Captain." And then they crank up the game, you know. But you flew the thing around. You know, it was just above asteroids, because essentially you had a shield and you had you could rotate and you could fire and you flew and you could, you know, you had a thrust so you could fly around and shoot stuff. But that was kind of about it. But
I remember that, like the stand-up Tron. That had kind of like bluish clear plastic parts on it with lights behind it.
It was cool looking.
But did they, they also have those games where like you sit on a motorcycle and you lean.
Not so great.
Did they ever make a Tron version of like the light cycle game, but where you sit on? That would have been cool, especially
like Sunrunner, but Tron.
Yeah, so you're like a light cycle. You're on a light cycle watching like the bricks and stuff. But it'd be even cooler if it had like a huge like hydraulic pump.
Threw you off when you hit a wall.
Hit it, yeah. It just chunks you over. Chunks you over.
Chunks you across the room.
That would be awesome.
I guess we'll have to wait for the VR version of it.
I like the Star Wars game. That was cool. Any kind of alternate control always kind of stood out. That wasn't just your standard joystick. Mm-hmm. And a couple
buttons. Battlezone was two joysticks. I kind of liked Battlezone, but it also kind of annoyed me.
I never really had a big arcade, like stand-up arcade game I was really any good at. Like, probably because I'm just slightly too young to have been able to go to the arcade by myself. It was always like begging my dad to take me to Aladdin's Castle at Baybrook Mall. It was a rare thing. It was Aladdin's Castle at Baybrook Mall, and then later it was Tilt at Baybrook Mall.
No, you may be too young. I was going to say, you should have been able to get there for like Mortal Kombat or something, right? Because that was early 90s.
Yeah, I'm 38, so I hit Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat were like the fighting games in the early 90s. But, I mean, you know, I have fond memories of arcade trips where my dad would take me and my brother to the mall, and we'd go, you know, he'd give us each $20 in quarters, and we'd go and spend a couple of hours.
And then your dad got sucked into the video game?
No, yes. Yes, and we had to save him. And
20 years later, you digitized him.
Yeah.
Again.
We never actually got him out. He's still in there. He's still in a...
And
still,
then you went to a party and Daft Punk was DJing.
Yes. He's still inside the Marble Madness cabinet looking at me.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a direct connection, but in college, a friend of mine, when Street Fighter II first came out, like the first day that there was one around to play, he like spent the entire evening playing Street Fighter II. And then the next day he went to the Renaissance Festival and got into a fight with undercover police officers.
Did he try to do like the Chun-Li kick where he was like, yep, yep, yep?
I don't know. Or he kept turning around, Or no, it was Double Dragon. I'm sorry, it was Double Dragon.
Oh, well, that's a big difference.
So he kept trying to turn around and elbow punch the guy in the face when he walked up.
Yeah. Are you a bad enough dude to save the president? That was a different game. That was Bad Dudes.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of those two dudes fighting waves of
cheap and easy to make
to accomplish the goal.
Easy to make.
That was what the plots were. Plots. Well, gee, it sounds like we've been talking about things that you could try, buy, or fry.
So maybe we
should formally go into it.
Maybe we should.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip
in the snark tank?
Okay, here's one. How about this is a new electric vehicle that gets 350 miles on a charge. Is it a Tesla? No, it's not. It's a bus, a city bus. The Catalyst E2 electric bus has debuted, and it will go up to 350 miles on city streets. They actually, on a Michelin track, they got 600 miles. So it's like a Tesla Model S, except you can bring, 60 of your friends along. How much would this kind of fun cost? Let's see. Well, these buses are around, so you would be able to ride them. The Philadelphia has one, has some. LA is getting some in 2017. But let's see. Oh, I thought they said what the price was. I think that they're, oh, here we go. The base price is $800,000. So slightly more than a Tesla Model S. But
the per person cost would be lower.
There you go. If you just can, like, charge your friends, you put a little meter in the front, and when they get on, they have to put in some money.
There you go.
I'm thinking this would be, if you're going to be the, like, if you're going to be a, startup millionaire or billionaire, I guess is the new standard, instead of having a limo, then you have one of these tricked out, and then it's all electric.
So how much does that cost awesome. Compared to a normal bus that a
diesel bus
school would buy
starts
or...
as low as, say, $300,000.
So it's quite a bit more.
But it's less maintenance and...
But, man, when you have to change the batteries, that could be a lot of bus batteries.
Well, no, it's the one... The 350 miles is enough for a bus to do its day's work, and then it charges overnight.
No, I'm saying, like, when the batteries go bad, you have to replace
them.
Oh,
and they're toast. It said that the battery is about the size of a twin mattress. So it's probably a little bit of a job to change it out. But if it's all together, though, I'm sure it's something like, disconnect it, drop it out, and put in another one. A lot less mechanics work than maintaining
it. It's the size
diesel.
Of a twin mattress and weighs as much as a black hole.
There you go. So there's that one. And if depending where you're at, you might be able to try that somewhere for the cost of a bus pass.
So where did you say who has it? What cities have it already?
Oh, so far Philadelphia and Los Angeles. It sounds like there are more that are possible, but they didn't mention them. So here's another electric vehicle that will go. They estimate that it'll go 238 miles. The EPA says that's what the range would be. 238 mile electric car. And is it a Tesla? No, it's the Chevy Bolt.
Bolt,
which is coming out this year.
To the Volt.
Volt. Right. The Volt is a hybrid that's got a gas motor.
Ironically,
powers a generator
right.
and
the
has
Volt
a battery.
Is old and busted.
The Bolt is full electric. But it's going to be around $30,000 after the tax credit. So that means it's still going to be under $40,000. And it gets 238 miles of range on it. That's cheaper than that's a better range than the low end Tesla Model S. And obviously it's like 20, it's 10 to 15. $10,000 to $20,000 less than the Model S, than the low end, the Model 60, their entry level.
I'm still thinking about that bus.
Obviously, it's going to compete with Model 3, huh?
I'm still thinking about that bus. Do you think that bus has like linear torque? Like
Like, I mean,
it's
fast,
it's
fast
electric
bus.
Vehicle, yeah. Yeah. So you could just like drop the pedal and just
drag bus.
Bus does a quarter mile in 9 seconds.
The 10-second bus, man.
And we see like bus. You know them like you know somebody taking that bus. Hopefully, it's, you know, if it's rear wheel drive, and then they could like drift around corners in downtown.
I'll pay to see that.
We need to marry that. I know this isn't in the try, buy, or fry officially, but are you guys familiar with the Comma One? Has anyone seen this?
No.
So you know George Hotz, the guy that like hacked PlayStation, hacked all that stuff. He's got a company, and they just announced for like for the three figure, it's like for under like $1,000, you can actually buy more or less a Tesla Autopilot and strap it into your car. It's got a LiDAR, which is just like a laser rangefinder that samples very, very quickly. It's got a camera. It's got some other electronics, and more or less, I think they're doing it for an Acura. They're going to have some other cars it'll fit into. Don't know if it's a good idea. This is one of those, you know, try, buy, die, try.
You know, try, die, or die.
But I'm telling you, you put one of these on that electric bus, man, and we're in business. But yeah, there I think they've been talking about it a little bit, but yeah, it's kind of neat. It's one of those things where you don't have to buy a Tesla to have that Tesla-like autopilot experience. You could die, you know, in whatever car you want to for just, you know, a few $100.
See, if one of us wins the lottery, then the Geek Gathering could be mobile on one of those buses. And it'd be just like, punch in your address in the app and we'll come by and get you.
New 2-hour opening on Wednesday night.
So, yeah, it'll auto drive. Well, the nice part is if that's got autopilot on it and is going.
Somebody punched in an address in Cuba.
You're probably not going to have any problem. But everybody else, if the thing doesn't work right, everybody around you, in front, whatever, is going to have a real serious problem.
You know,
it's kind of the elephant in the room. You know, the deal is unless you hit something bigger than the bus, you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
So with all that tech, but yeah, the thing is though that the Chevy Bolt is going to be the first electric car with a range that you could honestly, you know, one of the problems with other stuff like the Nissan Leaf or even the BMW i3 is that the 80-mile range might make sense in a lot of places, but in a city like Houston, you know, you couldn't go to Galveston from the north side, or you could hardly go from the Woodlands to, you couldn't commute from the Woodlands to say Clear Lake and then go home without a stop somewhere to get topped off, where 238 miles, you actually could, you could like go to work, have an evening out and still get home with an electric car in Houston, which is pretty darn amazing. And given again, the price after the tax credit is around 30K, which is not, you know, not far out of line from the average price of most new cars if one was looking for a new car.
Well,
so we'll be keeping an eye on that one. 0 to 60 in about 6.5 seconds, so it'll get out of its own way. I mean, it's not insane mode, but
and it only took a brand new company developing from scratch with a ton of money forcing itself into the market against all the systems that are in place to get, you know, the big automakers to finally like make a legitimate electric car and not like use it just as a tool to say that they did it and then sideline it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad they did, because I mean, this has always kind of been maybe not Elon Musk's end game, but the end game that works well for us consumers.
There actually are quotes from Elon Musk saying that he was like, I don't really think that, you know, Tesla's going to control the market or anything. Like, I'm really just doing this to get the big automakers to force their hand to have to make electric vehicles.
Good.
Well, I read somewhere, I don't remember where, but that you know, the thing with on electric cars, and if the Bolt comes through and if improvements keep happening, you know, like with like the auto driving and all that kind of stuff, the adoption rate could be crazy fast. It could be smartphone fast. Because you think about that. I mean, early before the iPhone, a lot of people were real skeptical about how many people would buy a, quote, what we call a smartphone. And then now look at it. I mean, the flip phone that used to be totally ubiquitous is
an endangered species.
Yeah. My dad is, you know, he didn't want to change. And finally, the place where he gets his cellular service from sent them a new flip phone that'll work on their new network because they were going to shut down the one that his old phone that he was still using worked on. So,
but I get that. You know, we like things to be solved problems. And, you know, the idea of buying the last, you know, X, the last thing in a given category that you'll ever need is very attractive. And, you know, it's difficult to get to that point with any kind of consumer electronics.
Well, and when they work correct, when the electric car works, you know, works like has a range where you're not worried about it, the advantages, it starts having serious advantages over, you know, a gas powered car. You know, you don't have to go get oil changes. The amount of maintenance you have to do is dramatically lower, you know, change the tires and make sure the battery's okay is kind of it. And think about all the different, you know, scheduled maintenance that you have on a regular car. I mean, I think that now that they've kind of solved, they've apparently solved the battery issue, that it starts making it really compelling. And at some point, it's going to be so far, you know, where even the cheapest, you know, little gas car, you know, right now you can go get a $12,000 or $13,000 stripped car with a little teeny gas motor in it for really cheap. Mm-hmm. I think at some point that's going to be what's left. It's that and the, you know, 1,000 horsepower Mustang that, you know, with the special key that, you know, there's a certain category of people who are going to still buy, but it's going to become a much more of a rarity, I would think, because it's compelling. It's, again, it's like smartphones. There's a, you know, there's nobody in their right mind really right now. If you're looking, other than if you just can't afford it, you're not going to say, oh, I don't want one of them smartphones. I need to have one that's got a button for each number. I have to have an actual button to press.
And a button for every three letters.
Hmm. Or four. I want to text by punching on a 10 keypad.
If it ain't T9, I ain't going.
I think what's made Pete's kind of right, so, like, you know, if you take, like, any kind of, you know, product that has been, I guess, completely kind of become a commodity, really brand becomes the only differentiator. You know, like, everyone can refrigerate food for the most part, but, you know, Sub-Zero versus, you know, like a 70s fridge, a little bit different. I think once we get to the point where, like, all the cars are the same, they never die, we're going to be paying for, like, okay, in a car crash, who gets to live? And it's like, I think that's what it's going to come down to.
You'll have to pay for the special AI.
Yep. Well, so he paid $20,000, he paid $17,000, like, $20,000 man walks away.
I think we're finally going to be, you know, there was the old joke about if cars advanced like computers, how the price would drop and you'd go, you know, 1,000 miles on a gallon of gas. I think electric cars are closer to getting the kind of computer benefit from, you know, that kind of improvement curve and benefit that we've never really gotten from gas vehicles. But moving on, and speaking of gas vehicles, just to, you know, in case we were too futuristic-y, this one just seems like kind of too much fun. I don't know if you've heard of the Caterham 7, the Lotus 7 is what it used to be called. Caterham is still around in Britain, and they are celebrating the 60th anniversary of the company, so they made essentially a throwback model, but it's brand new. It's the, you know, the basic, if you think about the kind of stereotypical British open wheel convertible fast little car, you know, the long bonnet, the long hood and the short trunk and the open wheel look with the fenders on it. That's a Lotus 7. And this one has an 80 horsepower three-cylinder Suzuki engine. It's got flared front wings and individual rear lights that recall the earliest 7 models. It's got a wood-rimmed steering wheel, classic instrument layout and interior panels. Everything's all, basically it's like buying a brand new 60s inspired little car. It's costs about the same as a Chevy Bolt, oddly enough. But they're only going to make 60 of these. So even though it doesn't have 1,000 horsepower, you'd better rush to get in line if you want to get your hands.
They
on
went on sale a couple days ago. I bet they're gone.
It kind of looks like a like the grandfather of the Polaris Slingshot before it went all Batman.
Or a very British Herbie the Love Bug kind of thing. Or what was that? Wasn't there like a Love Buggy kind of cartoon from Hanna-Barbera in the 70s that looked a little bit like this? I believe.
There was the one with the dune buggy.
Speed buggy. It was actually called Speed Buggy.
Wow. Yeah.
Speed Buggy.
The Roadrunner's after you.
This is old school motoring in the finest tradition, though. I don't know if they even made one with the string wheel.
It was the car that was alive, and it looked like a broken down jalopy. But then I forgot what happened, and all of a sudden it would turn to like a sparkling purple paint job, and like it was alive. It's like somebody's soul was trapped inside of it or something.
It would use
its big whip antenna to like steal things from people.
Because when your soul is trapped inside a car,
that's comedy.
That's how it works.
That's children's comedy.
The Devil Mobile.
That and Automan.
Automan?
Remember Automan?
I remember My Mother the Car.
No.
The car that was haunted by the guy's mother. Or reincarnated.
I would like to be in the creative meeting that led to like the pitch for that show.
I remember Ultraman.
We're gonna pass on the talking horse, but give me this.
Give me the talking car pitch. Let's hear that one.
All right, Little Woman in a Bottle. This is gonna be a great show.
Well, there was that whole slew of there was the magic show, so you had Bewitched, because Bewitched was big, is why they made I Dream of Genie. And then you had the like creepy, bizarre monster family thing, where you had the kind of Adams
monsters
family
and
thing
Adam
and
family.
The Munsters.
Yeah.
And the Adams family. Also monsters.
And you had Batman and the superhero spinoffs from around that time. There was an article talking about some of the other terrible superhero spinoffs that we have forgotten from the mid to late 60s, like Captain Nice and a couple of other really terrible ones. Now, Green Hornet was successful. There were some other just really drecky ones.
Far Out Space Nuts.
I said lunch.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the
Animated Series.
No, I like Star Trek the Animated Series. It had some neat stuff.
Spider-Man.
I bet you can't sing.
What was the one? It was the Spider-Man cartoon, but it was Spider-Man and like Flame Girl and Iceman.
And
it was
It wasn't the Justice League.
No. It was. Let's see. What was her name?
It was like
Firestar or something.
Firestarter.
Spider-Man. Was a horror movie.
Firestar.
Spider-Man. Yeah.
And Iceman.
Spider-Man and his amazing friend.
Oh, his amazing friend.
There you go.
See, I like those old '60s ones where each superhero had the song. They had to have a clever jingle song. I mean, everybody knows the Spider-Man
Space
song.
Ghost.
I love the Herculoids.
There was a Captain America of those that had a song. YouTube them. I'm not going to sing any of them.
Good, because
we're
out.
I bet you can't sing Spider-Man. Bet you can't sing.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. You know, we parodied the Spider-Man song on one of our CDs, The Flying Fish Sailors, Crawdad Man. Crawdad Man does whatever a crawdad can. Flips his tail and zips away, lives to pinch another day. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in.
Greetings, KPFT listeners. My name is Alma Vizcarra. As local election supervisor, it is my pleasure to introduce to you a local station board listener delegate candidate.
Hello, my name is Di Conkling. I would like to take this opportunity to ask for your number one vote in the upcoming KPFT election. As a longtime volunteer, you may already know me. We may have spoken about KPFT, I may have processed your entrance to a KPFT-sponsored event, or taken your phone call when you called in during Pledge Drive. I have been a longtime listener supporter for Radio for Peace. I believe that the future of our station will, as with most things, be ensured by the next generation of Pacificans. I know what can be done if we can find a way to bring the new generation into our family. I will strive to work with the existing contingencies to achieve unity and functionality within the local station board. I encourage you to get to know me. I volunteer enthusiastically and often. The station belongs to all of us, and we must all work together to ensure that KPFT continues to be a gift and guide for the future generation. I am Di Conkling, and I thank you for your consideration. I am asking for your number one vote.
KPFT invites you to Electro Love Fest, Saturday, September 24th, from noon to 1 a.m. Performers include Tres X, Gravel Tooth, Nameless Horses, Heartburn, A Live One, and more. The event happens at the Last Concert Cafe, 1403 Nance Street, near downtown Houston. It's a benefit for your community radio station. Tickets and more details are at kpft.org. See you there. This is KPFT, Houston.